Hi, I'm John. This is Channeling WordPress, Episode 7, May 5th, 2021. This podcast is going to focus on ways to use WordPress page builders that won't crush your page speed performance or your user experience performance. It's really more importantly to kind of wrap everything into user experience performance. Or some version of it. It's really not about page speed. Page speed just happens to be a major component that affects a user's experience on a website or specific web page. Back in November 2020, GTmetrix updated its algorithm to use Google's Lighthouse metric. Lighthouse is an open source tool developed by Google to analyze a web page from several angles. In concert with Google's focus on providing users with high quality content in response to their search engine queries, Lighthouse focused on how users are experiencing a website. It's not just about raw stats as the previous iteration of Google's page speed did. And so did GTmetrix up until November of 2020. So ultimately, Lighthouse's ultimate benchmark is how users are experiencing a web page. It's not just about raw stats. While page speed is a major benchmark, Lighthouse uses and analyzes five broader categories: performance, accessibility, best practices, SEO, and PWA, or basically what's called a progressive web audit. We're not even going to talk about those general things right now, but what we want to talk about is the nutshell, the results, what's in the nutshell after the November GTmetrix reports stopped relying on page speed and Y-slow. Page speed and Y-slow were basically outdated and only were relying on pure stats, not behavior of website visitors, not the behavior of website visitors. So if you were a GTmetrix user before November 2020, you may recall the first two tabs of a report, page speed score and Y-slow score, were basically instant grades of your website's performance, or lack thereof, presented with a combination of a bold color, an A through F grade in a big bold letter, and a percentage in parentheses, a November 2020 GTmetrix score was really easy to understand. You know, you could look at something and a big red F was definitely something you wanted to improve on. You wanted it to be green. I always was looking for a dark green 90 or better on the old outdated page speed score, and honestly I'd be happy if my Y-slow was somewhere close, you know, above 85, you know, kind of a lighter lime green. Now the colors really are just kind of like an in-your-face part of the grade, but really what mattered was below that, where they started breaking down where the issues were in the website. But GTmetrix was just friendlier. You know, you'd go to Google PageSpeed would rip your website a new one, and then you go to GTmetrix and say, oh, well, GTmetrix is a little bit friendlier. And that was always a little bit easier to parse to clients that, you just wanted to give a client something to say, your website's performing regularly. And to be quite honest, knowing inside that there were other issues, did create some internal conflicts. It caused me to go back and work on websites basically off the clock or out of contract to try to tweak things as I found them. But the nice thing about GTmetrix is that there are certain things that even in the old days, it pointed out that were directly negatively impacting a website. And a lot of those were fixable without having to get out the heavy tools to start programming issues related not so much to front-end structure, but into back-end structure. So the problem with the old GTmetrix scoring was the report was heavy on statistical analysis, not real-world experience based on customer behavior. Plus, Google's PageSpeed Insights adopted Lighthouse 2 years earlier than GTmetrix. So Google was really given quite a bit better reports for 2 years before GT Metrics basically got on the same page. Now, both GT Metrics and Google PageSpeed Insights tend to generate similar reports. So what does this have to do with WordPress web page builders? Pretty much everything, if we count how the average person that's building a website or developer uses a theme or with a page builder or a standalone page builder with a theme of their choice. One of the core culprits to basically slow websites are poor usage or sloppy or excessive usage of page builders. I'll get into that a little bit later, but they are generally one of the top issues when it comes to website performance and can be the most complex to solve after a website has been developed. You know, you build out a client website, it's all looking good, and you haven't thought to check anything with the performance until you're done. And then when you do that, the website says something like, hey, you know, time to fully interactive for your website is like 15 seconds. And you're like, what the heck? And while I venture a lot of that is structural stuff that is easy to fix, there can be things related to negative performance reporting that can't be fixed without either spending money or spending a lot of time cleaning code up. So the important thing is to not get to the point where you all of a sudden discover you have all these problems. So let me be clear that not all uses of page builders equal a failing performance report. I know plenty of websites that use fairly heavy application of page builders and still generate acceptable performance reports. There are other things out there that can slow a web page down that are not related to the page builder. But then again, some of those things make a bloated page builder or excessive use of a page builder part of the problem. Some of those things include poor performance by the server, or TTFB, otherwise known as time to first byte, render blocking resources related to JavaScript and CSS, excessive or poorly coded plugins, and poor image uploading and management practices. All of those can negatively impact website performance, and all of those generally show up on a report at some point or another. But the bottom line is there's no fire here. But the recent adjustments point to the fact that people have gotten a little lazy, a little sloppy, a little aggressive with the use of page builders. If you use a page builder wisely, you can create a WordPress website that GT Metrics and Google PageSpeed Insights score very well. I can point to a specific client's WordPress e-commerce website that uses WooCommerce that I created 6 years ago from scratch as an example. This is, of course, again, a WordPress website. It uses WooCommerce. It uses one of the more controversial plugins when it comes to allegedly being slow, Divi by Elegant Themes. And it has a what I would consider a heavier than normal load of plugins. But all the plugins are designed to enhance either the WooCommerce experience, security, or data collection. There is nothing in there designed to help me build the website faster. There's no post duplicators, no importers, no, there's a few performance enhancing plugins that tweak the high quality hosting. But beyond that, the plugins are strictly about making the website more functional for users. Period. Nothing in there to make the website look pretty or jump through hoops or glitter, at noon. Under the current GT algorithm, this particular website ranks a GT Metrics grade of B with a performance ranking of 86%. I need to get a little higher, but I see the path to it. The time to interactive of this website is 2.1 seconds. That's well below my baseline of 2.5 seconds for being time to interactive. and I'll explain that in a little bit. Fully loaded time is 2.3 seconds. So basically, time to interactive is what I look at first, because that means at 2.1 seconds, this website can now start properly interacting with the visitor, meaning a visitor can start doing things like select a product or check their account, fill out a form. And really, let's look at stuff that we would call above the fold. That stuff's really loaded. But everything below the fold is only going to take now another 0.2 seconds to basically be fully loaded. To me, that's a home run, even though I don't have a dark green A and there are a couple of little minor issues that I will still have to tweak. But while it's not close to perfect, I see a path where I can get this down under 2 seconds. That's not going to take me a lot to get done. You know what? GT Metrics found a couple images I could serve a little bit better. And so, you know, I will do a couple of changes. There's a few resources related to Divi that I will have to engage Divi with to see how I can get those resources from blocking rendering of the website. But then again, I'm only talking about 0.3 seconds on average. The simple summary is faster is better. But what can you do to reduce the chances of building out a slow WordPress website or individual page? This is really the meat and bones of this podcast. Some of my fundamental web design practices begin with the KISS principle. Keep it simple, you know, la la la. And it's particularly important if you're going to use a web page builder. And some of these basic practices that keep me on track is just start with the best hosting you can afford. Understand that those awesome hosting deals on shared hosting, whether it's shared WordPress, shared managed WordPress, or just a normal run-of-the-mill web hosting account, those accounts, the entry level of those accounts might say or seem ideal from you because it's only designed for one website. But generally, the first choice is seriously a very slow account. And on top of that, it's on a shared hosting, which is just slow to start with. So you really want to buy the best hosting. And one thing that I have to strongly suggest when it comes to hosting is look at the big number of what your hosting costs are, because there are things you're going to want to do that you will pay for after you buy that budget hosting. And the more these things that you actually have to add to the website, let's say in the form of plugins to do, you know, like backup modules so that you can customize not only when your website is backed up, but where those backups are stored. That's a whole podcast on its own. We'll go into that later. I'll have to make a note of that. So you really should not be looking at hosting that costs you $3 a year if you make that first contract, even if they say it's only cost you $10 a year and you think, wow, that's expensive, you know, when you re-up in 2 or 3 years. $35 a month hosting, that seems crazy. But how about this? Look at what it would cost you if your website crashed. And then look at a hosting program from a well-managed WordPress hosting company, and they're out there. I'm not going to push any particular brand. And it generally, a well-managed hosting for WordPress offering is going to include customizable backups, a heavy-duty CDN, your SSL, 24-hour US-based tech support, and somebody that you can call to fix stuff. And while $35, let's say, or $40 seems expensive, I can tell you that if your website breaks, if you do an update and you don't have the latest, greatest backup of your website, or you don't even know how to do that update from a raw file, or worse, you were saving that update on your hosting account and something happened to the hosting account. You know, for example, you went on vacation, forgot to pay the bill, your hosting account vaporized by the hosting company, everything's gone, you don't have a backup, and they can say, well, yeah, we can reinstate your account, but your website's gone. You will really see the value in premium hosting for your business website. No contest. Worth every bit of $35. If you look at the annual cost of that versus the annual cost of a potentially unreliable, piggish set of plugins to do backup security, CDN, and SSL outside of the hosting environment. Just so much nicer to be able to go to a control panel that's not related to your website and say, fix the website, push a button, and your website be redeployed at the last update, which was literally maybe that morning. Also, I test web pages before, during, and after either plugin or core WordPress updates, or if I'm making major changes in the page design. And I do this for a reason, because in my notes, I can document when performance impacts went either way. And at that point, I can decide how to deal with it, if I'm going to deal with it, or if it's something that I can push on with because there's bigger fish to fry. It's really hard to measure your website, let's say, once a quarter. And I know people have not used GTmetrix, let's say, since November. I know this for a fact. People listening to this will say, I haven't put my website on GTmetrix ever, so I don't know what's so important about this. Well, the bottom line is, you don't have a baseline where your website's performing and you make changes and the performance all of a sudden is not what you expect. You have a lot harder task to figure out what went wrong and when it went wrong. So testing before, during, and after an update and page development gives you good data. Take notes. Then, more fundamental stuff. Stick to a web development plan and only use the modules necessary to get the traffic to take the action in the affirmative of your client's mission or your mission. In other words, page builders can offer 30, 40, 50, 60 different modules, and if you add some third-party plugins, it can be over the top with modules that you can add to a website. And you start looking at this stuff after you, let's say, have made a plan that I'm going to build a page that looks like this, and either your customer says, well, I want something that looks like that my customer has, and if you can't either make the argument why that's not good, or you're basically just adding that stuff just because you think it's cool, you could be adding items, code, you could be adding bloat to your website that's going to negatively impact your page performance. So stick to the plan. Limit the use of modules and things like parallax and action where images slide in from the left and bounce out from the right. Every time you're calling on something like that involves JavaScript, for example, your website has to talk to the database and says, hey, send me that stuff. Bring it on over here. And that could potentially negatively impact the website's performance, or more importantly, the visitor experience, the user experience at your website. Only use the Divi theme, Divi Builder, or any page builder on pages when absolutely necessary. With Divi or other page builders, I use Divi a lot, that's why I put that in there, that you do not have to put the page builder on every page and every post. In fact, I seldom use page builders on blog posts because, page builders are a double-edged sword. While some of them unpeel out of websites in a friendly manner, some page builders, if you decide to not use them or you yank the plug in, they load up your website with a hellacious amount of gobbledygook code that's related to the layout instructions that the theme was using to give you all that fancy look, action, padding, spacing, font size, colors, rounded edges, you name it. All that stuff is built into the theme, and when you yank the theme, the instructions that the theme had posted on the page, in many cases, is there between every bit of content. So if you had, let's say, 7 or 8 modules worth of content, images, and text, and you yank the page builder out, and then you look at the website, you can find your content, the links or the actual text, buried in this case, a whole lot of code that makes absolutely no sense until you put the page builder back. So if you're not committed to a page builder, or you want to make extracting a website page builder out, you find a way to use the page builder as little as possible. And then there's some really simple housekeeping things that you just have to do. And this is where your browser inspector is your best friend. Optimize every image to the physical and the file size that would be what that would be ideal. Optimize every image to both the physical size that the website will serve it as, and then maximize the optimization on the file size, and consider using some of the new image formats out there that compress better with less loss. So here's the deal. If your website has a design, and when everything's said and done, you can take an inspector and inspect the element of an image, and that element of that image says this image is deploying at, let's say, 480 by 320 pixels. The actual file in your media folder in the back end of that website should be that size, 480 by 320 pixels. And that should be carried through to all images on the website, because you don't want WordPress to have to spend any time resizing an image because you uploaded some crazy large image that the website will never ever serve. So size your images and optimize the file size before you upload them. Don't rely on WordPress to upload them. Don't rely on a plugin to upload them. You can do all that without a plugin. And this is going to bring me to another best practice, and it's a charmer, baby. Reduce the amount of plugins you add when you're creating a website. If the plugin does not enhance the functionality of the front end of the website, or enhance the user experience in the front end, or the actual functions, let's say in this case on my one website where I have a few more plugins than I appreciate, the plugins are actually necessary for WooCommerce to do some of the things they have to do. I don't have a choice there. But people put plugins that add effects and fancy menu options and spinning wheels that are absolutely unnecessary and do negatively impact website performance. Forget all that. You do not need flashing lights and glitter falling out of the corner of the website to get your clients' attention. What you need is high quality content and a dedication to making their experience awesome. Because if you make their experience awesome and you serve your clients high quality content, one of the major gripes, bad SEO, is starting to be, let me rephrase that. One of the main gripes people have that their website doesn't place well when searched by certain keywords is something you can resolve through high quality content and addressing the user experience to be just simply awesome. Google's made this pretty simple. Give your customers a fast website with awesome content with SSL that is mobile first, and we will reward you with better SERP, better search engine page placement, results placement. It's pretty darn simple. You know, simply focus on user experience, not shock, awe, action, and wiggling stuff. Making the user experience awesome is simply your fundamental mission. You do that, your clients are happier, because that means people are likely coming to the website, taking an action in the affirmative, maybe buying something, maybe reaching out for a quote, filling out a form, subscribing to their blog, you know. And this leads to another thing when it comes to using your page builders wisely. There is nothing worse than a bloated page builder application that you then compound the issues by using a bloated plugin that came with the page builder. And this is where you're going to have to trust in common sense versus what some of these theme developers want you to trust, which is apparently them. For example, a lot of themes, especially on Envato, come with a page builder like WP Bakery or Fusion Builder. And while those two plugins aren't necessarily problematic if used smartly, there are some other plugins that are included with the theme, such as it's very common to see Uber menus, mega menus, and the one that I see a lot is a revolution slider. Everybody packs a slider in with these themes. Well, maybe not everybody, but enough do that, you know, revolution slider becomes this thing in the back end that some websites say, this theme needs revolution slider. And I have yet to find a website theme that depended on a third-party plugin to be functional. In fact, I think that's more of a marketing thing to maybe encourage you to buy a full license to something like Slider Revolution versus using it as it is provided with a theme, which is generally not a licensed independently version of Slider Revolution or these other plugins, but it's something that you actually generally wait around for the developer to update when they do their theme updates. But I am fully against sliders, okay? Sliders suck. And if you're going to put a slider in the top end of your website with, well, let's just say 2, 3, 4, 5 slides, you're going to basically load the front end of your website up with just bloat. You're just going to see junk happen. You're going to see your numbers get junked. And a simple test is go to your website, pull a slider out, just post a picture there, just for the heck of it, in the space that the slider is. But of course, measure your website on GTmetrics before you pull the slider out without anything in the top. And then when you put, let's say, a standard hero image up there, and then if you are using a page builder that will let you build a hero image with call to actions layered on top of it, then do that and look at the difference. I'll absolutely guarantee you that when you remove your slider, you'll cut literally seconds off your website's time to fully deployed score and metric. It's just simple. Sliders, I used to think sliders were cool, but there are scholarly studies that I tripped across when I'm noting that, darn, I had a slider break, and I pulled it out, and when I did my thing where I'm measuring before and after, I went back to my notes and said, wow, you know, I literally pulled a 5-slide slider out of the top of a website, a different one, not Slider Revolution, and my time to fully interactive went from like 6 seconds to 3.5 seconds just by removing the slider. Now, there were other issues, and eventually I got that website to about 2.5 seconds fully interactive, and the bottom line here is sliders are bad. Sliders don't do anything but slow your website down and irritate your customers. You say, what do you mean irritate my customers? Well, imagine you're looking at your phone and your web developer hasn't thought about yanking the slider on a mobile phone. And while you're looking at the phone, waiting for the website to deploy, by the time the website's fully deployed, the slider's already changing and distracting them. And a slider on a phone is just like silly as it can get, because what's a slider going to do? I've even tried using sliders as containers to build fancy, highly interactive hero blocks at the top of a website, but they still load a lot of CSS that's not used, and they negatively impact the time to interactive and the fully loaded time of a website. So, my mission here is to give you enough information to step away from some of the bad practices that good page builders can encourage you to do. And one of them, and when you do not have those bad practices involved with your WordPress page builder development, you can really create fairly fast, user-friendly WordPress websites with literally any web page builder. I'm John. This is Channeling WordPress, Episode 7, May 5th. And we'll subtitle this, Make WordPress Page Builders Your Friend, Not Your Bloated Enemy, period. I'm out of here.